Hi everyone, thanks for coming up so early after the party yesterday. My talk is titled Using Samba Libraries Outside Samba. Bit of introduction about me and the talk. I work for Red Hat on the identity management team along with Sumit and Alexandra. And yeah, SSSD is what I do pretty much all the time. So I'm not a Samba developer. I really don't know the Samba code very well. I just open it a couple of times. And that way the talk is not really about Samba. It's about different ways we are using the libraries that come out of Samba. In particular, it's about what is it like to maintain the libraries, because I maintain the RPM packages in RHEL and in Fedora. What is it like to use the Samba libraries like TLOC and TLN in a pretty large project that's not Samba? And I'll show you one, I think, interesting way we are using a libSMB client for access control in SSSD. And then finally, some ways that I'm working on extending the LDB with different backends. So just to put the talk into context, so what is SSSD? It's a system daemon, it's a Unix daemon that provides identity information and authentication and access control mechanisms from remote servers. On the operating system side, the interfaces we have are name service switch and PAM modules mostly. And on the backend side, like what can we connect to? We support LDAP for both identity and authentication. We support Kerberos for authentication. And as kind of combination of LDAP and Kerberos, we have a special backend for both Active Directory and Free IPA. SSSD is a pretty big project. I ran the slog count when I was writing the slides on the Git master and returned about 200,000 lines of code. And I kind of wonder if there's any other project that's not Samba, that's using Samba libraries so heavily and is this big. Really? No, don't know. Probably. So as I said, SSSD is really heavy user of the Samba code, and I don't think that the project would be possible without the Samba libraries. We use TLOC and TLVENT in, I think, pretty similar way as Samba uses. We're using LDB as the on-disk cache for SSSD. We use the TDB backend for LDB, but also, I think, for some key value stores, like very short-lived negative cache, we use the TDB directly. And for the access control feature with group policy objects, we're using a libSMB client. I'll get to that later. And also kind of a new thing, in the last couple of months, we started using the CRAP libraries that are not strictly Samba. There is a separate CRAP.org site, and you can download the libraries separately, but they come out of Samba and have been, I think, merged back. So first, I would like to talk a bit about maintaining the Samba libraries. In kind of as a historical development, the TLOC and TLN, so these libraries are not maintained by the Samba maintainer, which may seem a bit odd, because the Samba guys probably know them better than me, but it's just how it was, because when the libraries were split, the SSSD maintainer was Simo, so he maintained the whole bunch, and then SSSD was passed on. I received also the libraries. Maintaining the libraries, for the most part, it's been quite easy, so you do a really good job in code stability. But there are some things that, as a maintainer, I think can be improved. The biggest part is that, as a maintainer, I'm really interested in changes. What has changed if a new library comes out? Is this package, is there a new API that maybe we can use? Is there a fix that I need to roll out to even stable versions? Because there, in case of databases, there might be some data corruption. What changed? Currently, it's not really easy. If a new Telok or TDB or LDB comes out, a tarball magically appears on the FTP, and that's pretty much it. Using SAML libraries is kind of a similar story for the most part. It has been really smooth. The only issue, I think, or the biggest issue we have is a lack of better documentation. So earlier, it wasn't that much of a problem because, as I said, SSSD was started by Simo and he kind of taught everyone how to use, especially Tielemann has a bit of a learning curve, I think. But these days, the SSSD team is getting bigger and bigger. I think we have 6 people, something like that, working on the SSSD. And they are hired. They never worked on Samba or the SSSD before in the community. And having good documentation is really important in kind of making sure that these developers can start quickly. We realized that. And one of SSSD developers wrote the TLOG tutorial. His name is Pavel Trezina. And there's also, I think, TLOG tutorial that was not written by an SSSD developer. I think it was some kind of thesis or school project, but it was tutored and led by one SSSD developer. So I think the tutorials are now at, if you go to tlog.samba.org, what you see is the Deoxygen documentation that our team written. Yeah, I think documentation is kind of the biggest pain point in using the SAML libraries. And as they are developed, it would be really nice for us if the tutorials were kind of kept up to date. So if a new API is added and it's maybe a suggested way of doing something, then the tutorials should be fixed as well. As I said, the TLOG release is kind of an example of how the documentation can be improved. If you go to tlog.samba.org, you see the Deoxygen documentation that we contributed, but you don't really know what the library is about, where it's the Bugzilla and so on. If you unpack the tarball, there is a file that's called news, but there's an entry from 2007. And if you want to check what has changed when a new release comes out, you can run Git log, sure. But then you kind of have to know how the Samba tree is structured, so it's not the best or most user-friendly way. And yeah, what I've been doing for some time when a new new tarball comes out is that I just unpack the latest tarball and the previous one and I just run a diff on the directories, but that's not the best. Kind of in contrast, the CREP libraries, they were part of Samba and they were split by Andreas into kind of separate project. And if you go to the CREP.org site, I think it's very easy to see what the libraries are about. There is a separate kind of HTML page for each wrapper. There is documentation. Each wrapper has its own Git tree, so we can really see the changes. And there are also several tutorials like on Linux Weekly News and other sites. I'm a bit biased because I was contributing to the CREP libraries with Andreas, but to me this is like the role model the libraries should be developed and released. Because if all the other libraries like TLOG and Tielemann were presented in this way, I think they could get much more users, many more users. And actually, I first heard about the wrapper libraries from Andreas a couple of years ago when they were still part of Samba, and I tried using them, But because they were like embedded into the Samba code, I just gave up. It was just too hard to use. And now CREP is a dependency of SSSD, and we use CREP for pretty good unit tests. I really wouldn't like the presentation to sound like I'm disappointed with the Samba libraries. I think they are really, really good. But there is a bit more work that if you do these little things, these little polishes, the libraries could be just so much better. And obviously I depend on the libraries for my day work, for my project. And I would really like to discuss how we can together improve the way the libraries are consumed. I think the lowest hanging fruit that could really improve the experience is when there is a new release, write a changelog. Or you don't have to write it, you don't have to open an editor and write long sentences, but if you prefer, just send a Git short log, like a diff from the previous tag to Samba Technical, and say, hey, new libtail log is out, this is what changed. That's perfectly fine. And also, I know that all patches in Samba are reviewed, and I would like to kind of ask that during the patch review of the library patches, please also consider documentation, the tutorials, the deoxygen comments, so that the libraries are easy to use. I think these things wouldn't be too hard to do and would really improve the experience. There's a couple of more items on my wish list. One is to make it easier to track individual commits to the libraries. Right now, I think there's some kind of, it's still called Samba CVS list, where all changes are sent, something like that. Yeah, but then you get it all. And I'm not really that much interested in changes in the SMB part of Samba. I'm really mostly interested in the libraries. Maybe if there's like a special header in the emails that we can filter, that would help. But if what would even be best for me is if the libraries were either a Git submodule in the Samba tree or just a separate tree. And I can discuss this a bit with the Samba developers on the conference. I know this is kind of a recurring topic in the Samba team, but just wanted to bring it up again that yes, this is something that would make our life easier. The other thing is kind of goes back to presentation that Sumit had yesterday, that in SSSD we have some plugins that hook into Samba. For instance, we have an LDB plugin that creates links between users and groups if a user is created. And for quite some time, we were not really sure if the libldb member of if the libldb plugin interface is really stable. Can we expect it to change? So what we did for quite some time, we had a hard dependency on a particular library LDB version for SSSD, and every time new LDB came out, we had to rebuild SSSD for that version. And that really caused problems for Gunther's team, because at one point they needed the newer LDB version, and at that point we just said, well, we'll kind of rely on the on the API being stable and dropped the requirement. But I'm not sure if I would be comfortable dropping the requirement if I didn't have Samba developers like on IRC and I could just ask. And the last thing on the Samba library wish list is let the world know about the code that you have, because it's really, really good code. And I think TLLog could help so many projects. I mean, memory management is something that pretty much every C project struggles with, and TLLog is really nice, really elegant solution. Also, TEvent for, I think, anything that deals with network communication could be also really helpful. So that was the first part of my talk. In the second one, I would like to show one new feature that we accomplished using Samba library, using libSMB client, actually. Not libGPO, that is also in Samba tree. And that's limiting access control using Windows group policy objects. So SSSD has a kind of pluggable access control modules. There's several. There's a very simple module that just allows everything. You can allow users that match a particular LDAP filter. There is a access control list where you can enumerate the users or groups that you want to allow. And in the 1.12 release, which is currently the stable one, we added the possibility to kind of use and honor the group policies from Active Directory server when SSSD is acting as an Active Directory client or members of AD domain. As you probably know, that group policies are quite powerful mechanism. You can configure pretty much anything using GPOs, I guess even desktop background and stuff like that. But in SSSD, we only use the GPOs for access control and nothing else. It's mostly because the rest is not really something that SSSD deals with. It's an identity provider and access control daemon, so we just use use the GPOs for access control. But the code is actually built in an extensible way, so that as I'll show later, the group policy objects are stored on the disk. So maybe if somebody is interested, something like managing sudo rules using group policies could also be possible with this code. So just quick overview of how the GPOs would be configured in Windows. There is a GUI that's called Group Policy Management Console, where you create the GPO object and link it to the domain or organizational unit that the GPO is applied to. And then you configure the GPO. You say which users are allowed in which login write. But yeah, as you can probably hear, the login rights and so on, this is all Windows-specific terminology. And SSSD is Unix only, or currently, I think, even Linux only. So we had to come up with a mechanism to bridge this gap between the login rights that Windows use and the PAM services that are used on the Linux side. So currently, the GPO feature in SSSD has a set of default mappings that map several login rights from the Windows side to their kind of equivalent PAM services. So for instance, the remote interactive login write is mapped onto the SSHD service. The interactive login write is mapped to the like local display managers like GDM or KDM. But all this is configurable, so if you have your own PAM service or the default mapping don't work for you for some case, it's just line configuration that can be changed. More under the hood, implementation-wise, the access control in SSSD has kind of three steps. First, with the existing LDAP driver that we had in SSSD for quite a long time, we check the GPOs on the AD side and see which are applicable on the client machine we're running at. Then there is a separate part actually running as a child process that downloads the INI-like GPO policy files. And that there is a third part that extracts the INI files and does the policy decision, the allow or deny. So the first part, the LDAP driver, looks at the GPOs that are available and check if they are linked the organizational unit that the client machine is in if the GPO is enabled and enforced. Fetches the LDAP objects, the attributes that we are interested in. Mostly it's the file system path or the SMB path of the INI file. And we also have a configurable timeout that makes sure that we don't hit the SMB server too often and only download the policies if after the timeout too, for better performance. After the after we know which GPOs are applicable to the client machine, we fork out a child process. It's called GPO child, and there we use libSMB client, so library with from Samba that we didn't use before. We use calls that I guess you're familiar with to open the SMB share and fetch the file and store it on disk in the INI format. And then the GPO child, the subprocess, returns control back to SSSD. And the SSSD stores also some metadata about the INI file in the LDB cache. So this is how the INI file might look. This is actually from my test machine. I enabled the T user, test user, and administrator users for a test using the remote interactive log and write. So on the client machine on the Linux side, this would translate to SSHD. And then with all this data we have, we know the interactive, we know the log and write, we know which users are allowed. We can actually do the policy decision and allow or deny the user. That's second part. That was the second part of my presentation, and now the last one. This is something that started as a more or less hobby project of mine or a side project of mine. It's an backend for the LDB database that using the MDB or LMDB these days key value store. I decided to do this because one of the very frequent complaints we get about SSSD is that it's slow, especially with very large AD forests. The cache operations can take some considerable time. And we use the cache really, really heavily in SSSD. And one of the operations that was taking really long time for us was saving large groups and all their members. I'm not really sure whose original idea it was to use the LMDB in LDB. I heard it from Simon the first time, and you know, the other reason I started it was that it just sounded like a fun project. So about LMDB, LMDB is a very fast and compact, as in code size, key value store. It was written by Howard Chu, who is the CTO of Simus and works on OpenLDAP. The API usage is very close to BDB, to Berkeley DB. I think that was also one of the design goals. And that's pretty much all I'm going to say about LMDB. Howard Chu did many, many talks on LMDB, on FOSDEM, on LDAPCon, so search for these talks if you want to learn more. About LMDB speed, also, Howard wrote quite a few benchmarks that compare LMDB with other key value stores. I think the benchmarks mostly compare with databases like KyotoDB and LevelDB and so on. If you follow that link, you will see the page Howard wrote with nice graphs, and kind of unsurprisingly, in their benchmarks, LMDB just rocks. The benchmarks they have on this side are actually based on the on this branch from LevelDB. So LevelDB has a tool called DBBench that runs several benchmarks, has several benchmarks for several key value stores. I ran it when I was writing these slides and working on the LMDB backend for LDB. These benchmarks were extended for LMDB and also for TDB by Howard Chu and by Simus. So yes, again, LMDB wins by a landslide. I pretty much randomly picked two tests from the DBBench tool. These are actually where TDB is the closest in performance to LMDB. But yeah, if you follow the GitHub link, you will see the code and you can check exactly what's it doing. There was supposed to be a talk by Ralph Bema today in the afternoon, but I hear it was canceled, so don't attend the talk. Nonetheless, on Samba Technical, I saw a link to his Git tree where he has the TDBench tool. So in preparation for this talk, I took the TDBench tool and I ran just a couple of simple tests on all the tests, by the way, even these and the ones that I'll show later were just run on this laptop. So no extra performance machine. I ran with mostly the default settings again. I think the dash D parameter is number of transactions. Or transaction testing, I forgot. Anyway, again, LMDB is really fast. In this case, it's so fast that I'm not really sure if there's maybe some bug. Because if you take a look, it's what, many, many times faster. There's a question.
Sorry.
Just one small comment. I mean, these numbers look really depressing for Samba performance, but at one conference, I sat next together with Howard Chu, and the case where TDB performance really matters is our non-persistent databases like Locking TDB and so on. Mm. And there we are about equal, okay. Because we have multi-writer. We have a hash table, and so TDB is really heavily tuned towards Samba file server performance. I admit it sucks for persistent databases and for like whatever stuff filling just sequentially, but if you look at, so I just want to put this straight.
This is completely out of context.
Yes. And TDB is not that bad for the users that we have, for the performance sensitive users.
Yes. And I think this is a really good point because, as you say, there are different use cases, and I think LDB would benefit from allowing different backends with simple code change, and that's exactly what I will get to later. So as I started working on the MDB backend, I started kind of very naive way. I just opened the TDB backend and started going through the code and started modeling the LMDB backend after that, and most of the work could be summarized as substitute TDB calls for MDB calls. But that's really not the right way to write a new backend, because then you end up with really huge code duplication. It's just ugly. And also in the TDB backend, I'm not actually sure if the other backends that are in LDB tree now are used. I know that there is an SQLite backend and there is an LDAP backend, but at least for Samba, there was a really lot of functionality that was like critical for how Samba and also SSSD works, kind of hardwired into the TDB backend. And that's what I kind of started to change. And yeah, I think now we're kind of getting back to what you said. There are different use cases, and there is not a single database that everyone would like for their use case. LMDB, because it was created for open LDAP, it's really nice in environments that perform mostly reads, like an LDAP server. But there are other use cases, and other databases might be much better. I've heard good things, but I really haven't checked. RocksDB, I think Ralph Bema mentioned, I think it was LevelDB or KyotoDB. I might be confused. Anyway, there are different use cases, and each one can benefit from a different database. So what I did was I started splitting the generic code from the TDB backend to separate modules. As a nice side effect, these separate modules can be unit tested. There are already tests in the LDB directory, but they only test using the command line utilities. So we call LDB add, fetch, search with LDB search, delete with LDB del, and so on. But I couldn't really find any unit tests in the LDB code. They could be created. The other thing I noticed is that sometimes the functions that were in the TDB tree had equivalence in the like external generic LDB API that can be just used. In some cases, not. Some cases, the functions are just really similar, but the TDB or LDB TDB version is optimized for a specific use case, but some functions can be just merged. So I, in my Git tree, I have a couple of files that are called LDB underscore mod underscore some operation, where I split some common module logic. So the TDB TDB backend is the LDB TDB backend has T-event wrappers that where each database operation is represented by a T-event request. Stuff like attribute filtering for search, that's all in the modules. And what I found out is that already, as I started splitting the common code, I already have more lines of code in these common directories than in the MDB specific. And all this code can be reused if somebody wants to use something like the RocksDB or KyotoDB or whatever. What I have now is the common code, the T-event request wrappers, all the basic LDB operations, adding, deleting, modifying, searching, using LMDB now work. I don't have the indexing done or the special attributes like case insensitivity and so on. And the permissive control is not implemented at all. But the work was kind of getting sizable, and one of the reasons I wanted to show the work in progress on the conference was to get kind of other opinions if this is the right way to go. And yeah, I sat down yesterday with Stefan Metzemacher, got some feedback, and one thing that he showed me, and I had no idea, was that I think you did also some work in the LDB code. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I had no idea that this was done, but now I saw your branch, and you know, it's something I need to look at. Mathieu?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so this was your branch, right? Yeah. So this is on my to-do list. As I said, I started writing unit tests for the modules because all the new code I wrote must be compatible with the existing backend, not break anything. And also, as I was developing the code, I was often not really sure about, especially how corner cases work, you know, stuff like what exact error code or what exactly happens if you try to delete a record that's not there, so on. So I was writing the unit tests, first running them with the TDB backend and then checking if the MDB backend works more or less the same or exactly the same. There are API tests, unit tests, not tests that would use the command line utilities. And I wrote them all with Simoka, which is a unit testing library that Andreas maintains. It's a really nice, compact library that's really portable. It runs on everything, including Windows. It has a output module for the subunit format that I understand is used in Samba. So I hope this will be acceptable. And as we talked yesterday in the evening, the one advantage of using separate unit tests for the library is that these tests can be shipped and run with the LDB tarball. So consumers like Fedora and RHEL could just run these separate unit tests as part of the build. So yeah, using the Simoka test is some also thing that I would like to discuss. I don't really have really good benchmarks because the code is not complete. I'm not really sure if it's something that can be merged eventually. I wrote a very simple test for the case that resembles SSSD. So it's a single process, just a very simple LDB program that writes some data to a database, fetches them back, checks if all the attributes are there, and then deletes the data. For this use case, which is kind of what SSSD does, the LDB backend was about twice as fast. But the LDB backend is really not complete, and this is not really a conclusive benchmark, but I guess it shows that there is some value in the work. You can check out the code, it's on GitHub. It's a constant work in progress. I might just push whatever I'm working on at the moment, but yeah, you can check how it looks like. And that's pretty much it. You can check out the source of the slides from GitHub as well.
So I've got a question. When you started to work on this MDB backend, did you profile LDB?
Not really. I ran the simple benchmarks from the LevelDB code that I showed earlier.
Yeah, okay. So,
but I didn't set on improving TDB, if that's what you're
asking. Well, so from my experience, I think the most problematic part in LDB is actually not in TDB. It's the way LDB. So basically, the LDB object is marshaled into a value in TDB.
Yeah.
And when I run profiling on it, I find that the time where we spend most of the CPU cycles, one was not reading from the database, but was unmarshaling the object and doing depending on the size of the object, but and doing some stuff. So I'm just wondering if you made some profiling on it before, or when you say, oh, I need to try to do MDB.
We did some benchmarking using like Colgrind on SSSD. And there, in those use cases, the most time was spent in TDB. I think we did the benchmarking when there was a case where JR Aquino had some really slow, I think, netgroup searches or something similar, and there I ran the Colgrind, and yeah, that turned out TDB. It's really high up. More questions?
First of all, it's great that somebody looks at this. LMDB is really cool piece of work. One question I have is about the data model that you're using. Are you just
very similar to the TDB backend?
Yeah, LMDB is from the LDAP project, and LDB is pretty much an LDAP backend.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're asking why not use the MDB directly? Something like
no,
that?
No, I'm asking, have you taken a look at the way OpenLDAP stores its LDAP tree into LMDB? Because, I mean, TDB is a key value, LMDB is a B tree, which is sorted.
Mm-hmm.
Can we make use of of this sorting and take a look at LMDB's way to encode the LDAP data and just share code with that. Or not share code, but share ideas.
Yeah.
Because Power 2 is really after performance.
Not really. So one way I wanted to kind of really retain, for at least for SSSD, is the LDB API. We use that as interface towards our cache, and that's really handy. I really didn't look into internal data representations, stuff like that.
So maybe I'm just talking rubbish, but my idea would be to keep the LDB API, which is reasonably close to the LDAP semantics.
Exactly.
And just change the data representation in the backend to what OpenLDAP uses, which from 10 miles above, looking at it from 10 miles above, does exactly the same. Have some LDAP-like semantics on top of, or using some API, and then store data on disk and,
something to look at.
The other comment I have is talk to Nadia Ivanova. She's also working closely in that area, and at least a personal opinion of mine is, in 5 years' time, I would like to get rid of the LDB implementation.
I see.
And use OpenLDAP. Yes, we need some LDB-like API. It's good code, I guess, and SSSD benefits from it, but it's the wrong approach. We should have used OpenLDAP at the time it was difficult to use, but eventually we should find good ways to merge everything and just, Okay, just a general comment, my personal remark for my strategy for the next 5 years. Good code.
But the start will be to take your code.
Yeah, of course.
Perfect.
Sure.
Please finish it, and we will help you merge it.
Yeah, indeed.
Thanks.